Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, crime stories. Later on, we hear the lineup from 1952. But right now, Frank Lovejoy stars as reporter Randy Stone in this drama crime series, Nightbeat. This episode first aired on NBC on July 10th, 1950.
Wheaties presents Nightbeat. On stage tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, Nightbeat, another in the Wheaties big parade of exciting half-hour presentations. Nightbeat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Nightbeat for the Chicago Star. Stories begin in many different ways. This one began when a man who wanted to play king and ended with a real king taking top billing, Old King Death.
Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
Chicago's theatrical district at night is a river of light, flashing marquees and gay crowds. But through it flows a deep current of hunger and disenchantment, illusion and hope. Yes, hope, forever dying, but never quite dead. There was hope, a strained, threadbare hope on old Max Saracen's face as I crossed Randolph Street and saw him buttonholing Charles Kelsey. Kelsey's a play producer, currently more famous for the frequency of his marriages than those of his stage hits. As I strolled up, Max had one hand on Kelsey's arm, his gaunt, bearded face eager and anxious.
You should have notified me, Charles. I certainly would have appeared at the tryouts if I'd known they were being held. Surely it's not too late.
I'm sorry, old boy. Oh, hello there, Randy.
Hiya, Charlie. Hello, Max.
Charles, listen. You know my work. Remember my performances in the Theatre Guild, Shakespeare Festival. Me King Lear, me Richard III.
Yes, but that was over 20 years ago.
And it was I who asked that grand old man of the theater, Frank Gaydosh, to take you on as an assistant. If it weren't for
me... Can't you understand? Henry IV has already been cast. What do you do with a fellow like this, Randy?
Henry IV? Don't tell me Shakespeare on Randolph Street.
Why not? In modern dress and a few sensational innovations that I promise you, Randy, will make Chicago sit up and take notice.
Well, maybe you got something, Kelsey.
I promise you they will sit up and take notice, Charles, if I do King Henry for you. It cannot be too late.
Oh,
you said yourself it'll be...
Max Saracen paid no attention to me. His haunted eyes were fixed on Charles Kelsey, and his tall, angular figure towered over us as he pleaded with the producer. The old actor had a single-track mind.
I'm sorry, Max.
But I could see that as far as Kelsey was concerned, it was going in the wrong direction. It embarrassed me to hear him plead with Kelsey, for the old man had once been great.
Shakespeare's kings from Priam to Claudius.
I've said all I've got to say to you tonight, Max. Now, if you'll kindly remove your hand from my arm...
I'm not asking for any major part, Charles. The part of the king is fairly minor in this play, but it was made for me.
Max, for the last time...
Charles, please, I need it.
Oh, you old you relic, you. Do I have to use force?
Oh, cut out the rough stuff, Kelsey. Don't!
Move! Lay hold!
The old man changed before my very eyes. It was frightening. He was suddenly a giant, taller and broader than I'd ever seen him, the stoop in his back gone and rage blazing from a face of iron. He stood like a king in majestic wrath, his eyes darting about until he spotted Charles Kelsey pushing his way through the crowd.
Hold, you foul, fat-witted dog! Stop!
Max, wait!
Keep away. Take your hands off me.
Max, don't be a fool.
I'm warning you, Max. I don't want to hurt you. Help! Help me!
Max, stop it. Stop it. You're killing him. Max staggered back as I drove my shoulder into his chest, and Kelsey dropped to the pavement, still kicking. I hurried Max across the street where my car was parked and took off just as a cop showed up. When we got out of traffic, I headed out Sheridan Road along the lake. A nice cool breeze blowing off the water, Max. Feel better?
Why, yes. I feel all right. You're Randy Stone, the journalist.
Who did you think it was?
I just didn't... What happened?
What do you mean, what happened? You had a little argument. Max, look at me. Don't you remember?
Oh, what time is it?
Wait, it's nearly 8.
Oh, I'm late. How could I have forgotten?
What?
I was going to see Mr. Kelsey, Charles Kelsey. You know, the producer.
Oh, I see.
He's opening with the production of Henry IV. You've probably heard about
it. Yeah. Now, look, Max, why don't you join me in a bite to eat at Mr. Joe's? What do you say?
Why, what time did you say it is?
It's about 8.
8. He often works late. Yes, of course. My dear lad, would you mind dropping me by Charles Kelsey's office on Randolph Street, the Warwick Building? I may catch him yet.
Well, look, we can call him up and... Uh-oh.
Eh? What is it?
A police car just pulled in behind us. Some Eagle Scout must have taken down my license number.
What do you mean? Why?
Max Harrison?
Yes, I'm he.
All right, climb out.
What? I?
Now, look, officer...
What's the meaning of this?
The meaning is you're under arrest.
They bundled Max into their car and drove off. I tailed them to headquarters where Max was booked for simple assault, a misdemeanor, and held on $50 bail. I found a telephone and called up Max's home. His wife answered. She broke down when I told her what had happened.
Well, how could he? He was depending so much on getting a part at Mr. Kelsey's play. It meant everything.
Well, Max isn't well, Mrs. Saracen. The quicker you get him to a doctor, the better off he'll be.
Anything, Mr. Stone. Well, there isn't even any food in the house.
Oh,
Max, he's been going crazy trying to make ends meet, trying to pay my doctor's bills.
Well, look, don't worry now. I'll see what can be done. Well, what could I do? Not much. So I went to the office. I touched a few of the boys. There were 5 here, 10 there, until I had it. Then I went back to headquarters. The desk sergeant stared at the money.
What's this?
Max Harrison's bail. You can turn him loose.
I turned him loose about 20 minutes ago.
What?
Sure, Kelsey dropped the charges.
Oh, I see. He must have finally figured out which side his publicity was butted on. Max, go home?
I don't think so. Kelsey sent a limousine over to pick him up. He wants to see him.
Kelsey? Wants to see Max?
Well, that's what the chauffeur said. You know, Stone, I'm beginning to wonder if I did the right thing. The old man didn't seem right in the head. I'm kind of worried.
You're worried. So long, Sergeant.
Hey, where are you going?
To Kelsey's office before Max kills him. I couldn't imagine why Charles Kelsey would want to tempt fate by bringing Max to his office. But whatever the reason, I was too fond of the old actor to have him run the risk of killing a man. I rushed to the Warwick Building, went up to the 10th floor where Kelsey maintained his offices. I was about to go in when the door jerked open. Max Saracen shuffled out, pushing past me blindly, and I grabbed his arm. Hey, Max.
Eh? Oh, Randy.
What is it? What happened?
Huh? Oh, nothing. Why?
What did Kelsey want to see you about?
He offered me a job. A job.
Max.
Yes?
What kind of a job?
Playing a part.
What kind of a part?
I can't tell you. Please let go of me, Randy.
No, wait a minute, Max. Now, wait a minute. What's the big mystery? What kind of a job is this going to be, anyway?
It could be the death of me. Now, please, let go of my arm, Randy. Death of me.
Max. After Max Saracen had publicly humiliated Charles Kelsey by attacking him in the street, I didn't think the producer was going to offer Max a job without some kind of a catch to it. And when Max emerged from Kelsey's office, I could see by his face that I was right. The old actor was crushed. I barged into Kelsey's office to find out for myself and to warn him that he was playing with dynamite.
Mr. Stone, no man or woman for that matter can cross me with impunity. I keep books and I settle all accounts. Every slight, every blow, every insult. I keep a record of them all, Mr. Stone. I overlook nothing, and I repay with interest.
What satisfaction's there getting even with someone who doesn't even know what he did to you?
You expect me to believe that?
Your mind is so narrow it squeezes right through the facts.
I'll remember that.
I wish you would. Max is a sick man. Now, what kind of a job did you give him? Now, let's have it.
Take your hands off me.
I asked you. Why is he so upset?
Disappointment, what else? You wanted the part of King Henry. All I could give him was the job of understudy.
Understudy? Then why the secrecy?
The old ham fancies himself another Barrymore. He doesn't want it known that he's had to accept the part of a mere understudy. It's quite obvious, isn't it?
When is this show going to open?
Oh, in 3 or 4 months, I imagine. You're satisfied? Now get out.
Yes, I'll be happy to, just as soon as you Tell me who's going to play financial angel to your Shakespearean clam bake now that your wife has separated her bankroll from it.
My wife and I have suffered long enough from the malicious lies of scandalmongers like you, Mr. Stone.
Oh, yes, yes, I know. What about that well-known scandal sheet, the court record? That separation suit was faked, I suppose.
Mrs. Kelsey has reconsidered since then.
Oh, well, congratulations. You stay married to her long enough, you too can be in the social register.
The social register. I'd express an opinion on that point, Stone, but not to you. My wife's passion for blue blood is a foible outside the realm of this discussion. However, if it helps convince you that we've solved our differences, you might note that we're entertaining tonight with a little reception in honor of Count Raphael de Guidio.
Oh, where did Max go when he left here?
How do I know? Now, will you get out of here?
Yes, with pleasure. I need a little fresh air. Oh, hello, Mrs. Saracen.
Yes?
It's Randy Stone again.
Oh.
Has Max gotten home yet?
No. No, he'll be home late. He's dining out.
What's that?
He called up a little while ago. I guess you know what happened, don't you? It was awfully generous of Mr. Kelsey. The whole thing was a mistake. He never meant to have Max arrested. But I do appreciate your concern for Max. It was good of you to call me.
Look, who is Max dining with?
Well, with Mr. Kelsey at his home. He wants to discuss a part with Max for his Henry the Fourth. It's a wonderful break. Just what we've been hoping for. Max was all choked up with emotion when he told me about it. It's about time. Poor darling.
So Kelsey had actually invited Max over to his home. Why? What kind of web was he weaving for the old actor? Whatever it was, I knew it had only one purpose in Kelsey's twisted mind: to destroy Max Saracen, to get even. I got into my car and headed for the Gold Coast where Kelsey lived. I pulled up in the courtyard, went to the door, flashed my press card to the butler.
Thank you, sir. I believe you'll find most of the press people in the next room by the punch bowl.
Oh, thank you for the tip, but I'm looking for one special character, Max Saracen. Have you seen him?
Saracen, sir? I know, sir. I do not believe...
All right, I'll look around. He's probably somewhere in that mob on the ballroom floor.
I think not, sir. Right. There has been no Mr. Saracen. I've let in everyone, sir, and there's been no one by that name. That's quite definite, sir. I would remember a name like that.
Yes, well, I'll look anyway, thank you. I shouldered my way through all that soup and fish, feeling as conspicuous in my everyday clothes as a burglar at a policeman's convention. Where was Max? I glanced from one face to another. There must have been nearly 300 of them there. Was he in another part of the house? Had he come in by another entrance? I couldn't be sure. Kelsey was nowhere to be seen either. If he was alone with Max, there was no telling what would happen. I spotted Mrs. Kelsey over with a group of females clustered about the guest of honor. I was heading in her direction for information when a voice behind me brought me up short.
Stone! Well, what are you doing here?
I'm slumming, Kelsey. Where's Max? I know he was coming here.
Charles! Well, it's about time you were arriving. Whatever's been keeping you?
I've been tied up at the office, and then I had to get dressed. Oh, Edith, this is Mr. Stone, the Chicago Star. My wife.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Charles, the Count has been here for quite some time now. Come on and meet him. Hurry.
Kelsey, as soon as you're through, I'd like a word with you.
Oh, Mr. Stone, you really should meet the Count Raphael de Guidio yourself. He's just arrived from Barcelona, and he's truly one of the most delightful and charming gentlemen I've ever met. A true aristocrat.
Yes, it'll be a pleasure, I'm sure.
This way. Oh, poor man. Just look at him over there behind those palms.
Where? I don't see him.
Oh, over there, in the midst of all those women. They're simply devouring him. Oh, Count Raphael. We'd better go round. Here he is. Oh, Count Guidio.
Ah, Signora Kelsey. I am... Oh.
The Count de Guidio stood staring at me. A red ribbon of honor, three medals decorating his magnificent dress coat. In fact, any way you looked at him, he was a magnificent figure of a man with a magnificent snow-white Van Dyke beard, every inch an aristocrat. Except, of course, he wasn't the Count de Guidio at all. He was Max Saracen.
My husband, Charles, Your Highness.
It is indeed a pleasure, Mr. Kelsey.
I have been looking forward to this for a long time, Count. Yes, indeed.
And Mr.
Stone. A Randolph Stone, Esquire.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. The Count de Guidio. Mr. Stone is a journalist.
Well met, Mr. Stone. Well met. I have always admired the gentlemen of the Fourth Estate. To hold a mirror to our life and times is a profession requiring discretion, understanding, and perhaps the ability to say less than one knows.
Why, Count Raphael, you're a philosopher.
Yes, I see what you mean, Your Highness. Silence, even for a journalist...
can be golden, Mr. Stone.
Yes, golden. It can also be yellow.
Oh, I see Commodore and Mrs. Dwight Vredenburg have just arrived. Will you excuse me, please? I'll bring them over.
All right, what goes on here? What's the idea?
Randy, please.
I'm paying him well for this. Will you join me in a bit of punch, Randy? If His Highness will excuse us.
But, of course.
All right.
Come on, have a glass of punch, Stone. It isn't too bad.
You won't get away with it, not after the morning edition.
After tonight, Stone, the more you expose me, the better I like it. You know, it occurs to me that I should have invited you here in the first place. Your presence fits very nicely.
What are you trying to do?
Teach my wife a lesson. Come on, I do say, have some punch.
No, thank you. I've already tasted them.
My dear blue-blooded wife will get the lesson of her life.
Kelsey, why don't you see a psychiatrist?
You do need a drink, old boy.
Yeah, is there a real Count de Guidio? I suppose there must be.
Naturally, he was due to be here tonight, but I received a wire at my office saying that his plane was grounded en route from Miami, Lisbon, and Point Cis. Uh-huh. So, not wishing my dear wife to be disappointed...
Oh, Charles!
Yes?
Oh, I'm afraid the Count isn't feeling very well. Oh, dear, I suppose it has been an awfully hard trip. He has to leave.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry. Where is he?
In the hall. I've had Perkins bring him his things. Oh, it really is too bad with the evening so young.
Max was getting into a big black limousine as I ran down the stairs to the driveway. I called to him. Max! The car door slammed shut. The uniformed chauffeur threw the limousine into gear and spun away as I reached the side of the car. I was about to turn and go back into the house to question Kelsey when I saw the car circle the driveway and stop at the servants' entrance. As I hurried over, Max was getting out and was stripping off his overcoat. Oh, Max, now don't tell me that Kelsey wants that outfit back before you go.
Randy.
What goes on?
If you must know, I'm going to help in the kitchen.
In the kitchen?
Yes, yes, the kitchen. Are you satisfied?
But why? What for?
For $100.
How much did you get for playing the Count?
Also $100. But I don't get it until I earn the second $100.
But why? Why would he pay $100 for a dishwasher?
I don't know, but I've got to do it, Randy. I need the money. You might as well know it. Now go away, please. Let me get it over with.
Okay, Max, but you'll get it over with a lot faster with an understudy to assist you.
An understudy?
Yeah, me. Come on. So this was the payoff. This was the booby trap. I couldn't help feeling it was even meaner than it looked, and I wanted to be around to try to keep it from exploding. We went around and back the servants' entrance and stepped into the kitchen. Servants had evidently been briefed by Kelsey, but they said not a word. They asked no questions. They just stared at us and whispered a little to each other. A stout old dame pointed to the pile of dishes in the sink.
Them there.
Thank you.
What about an apron, Max? You can't wash dishes in that dress suit without...
I've got to, just as I am. It's part of the agreement. I won't kid you, Randy. I've got to do this. It's vital. My wife and I, we've been starving.
You don't have to tell me. Look, when Kelsey decides to get even, he doubles it in spades. We grabbed a couple of dish mops and went to work. Max laughed silently to himself as he worked, silently and bitterly. He turned to me.
A king to a count to a scullery boy in one short day. A breathless descent, eh, Randy?
For my dough, you're still king, man.
Thank you, lad. Aye, a king. You may me glory and mistake deposed, but not me griefs. I am still king of those... Oh, I dropped...
Oh, forget about it. What's another dish to Kelsey?
There I lie like a broken plate, used briefly and then... Life is short, Randy, so short.
So what? It's not the length, but the performance that counts, and you were always great, Max, always.
You're a kind wag, my lad, a veritable squire of the night, a minion of the moon. We're the moon's lovers, you and I, Randy, governed by her as is the sea, for our fortunes do ebb and flow like the ocean's tides, now up, now down.
Well, that's life, Max. It's like sitting in the aisle seat in the movies, past the cleanser.
By heaven, I'll hate you everlastingly if you bid me be of comfort anymore. I am barren, bereft of friends.
But you're not, Max.
I have lost the name of king. My jewels are a set of tawdry beads, my place a verminous hermitage, my rich apparel a beggar's garb.
make foul weather with despised tears. Curse heaven and die.
Oh, he's falling to pieces. I've got to get him out of here before... Uh-oh.
Right in here, ladies and gentlemen. Tycoons, barons, and literary lions. Here. Here's the surprise I told you about.
Kelsey, stay out of here.
Hold the music, please. Please. Here he is. Your nobleman from Spain, your aristocrat. The Count Raphael de Guidio in person.
Count Raphael, what's the meaning of this? Charles.
This is the silk purse, my dear. The one you keep telling me cannot be made from a sow's ear. Well, look at it. The sow's ear that you were convinced was the silk purse I never could become. You're born gentleman. The kind of gentleman I never could be. Oh, no, I'm not good enough. Well, meet him. How goes it, Count? When you're through with those dishes, come out and give these hypocrites some more samples of your wits and gentility. Look at him, Edith. Look! Your gentleman, my hired clown.
Oh, you're unspeakable.
Oh, you weak-minded phony. The only thing you've proved is that Max is a gentleman compared to you.
Villain! Viper damned beyond redemption!
Max, take it easy.
Snake whom we've warmed with our harsh blood! Spotted Judas!
Keep away from me!
Will ye bring Max. Calumny upon our fair name? By heaven!
Max, don't come back!
Get away! Get away! Put me down!
But it wasn't Max. Someone else, a giant, a king
Let
with
go.
A face of iron.
Let go! Help!
Put him down, Max. Put him down.
I'll make a Golgotha, you grinning skull.
No, Max, don't. Put him down.
When there are devils, cast them out.
Max had lifted him over his head and hurled him through the window to the street below. I clutched his arm and half-dragged, half-pushed him out of the door and down the stairs to the street. I got him into my car and we drove about for a while. He sat beside me, staring ahead lifelessly as he had once before that night. The power and the majesty had gone out of him. He was just a tired old man once more, talking to himself without making a sound. I stopped in front of a drugstore. I got out and found a telephone. I dialed the Kelsey residence.
Yes?
Who's talking?
Sergeant Charles Inc., City Police. Who's this?
This Randy Stone. I just left there a little while ago.
You took Max Harrison with you.
Yeah, that's right. He's with me now.
Keep him there. Where are you?
In front of a drugstore, corner of Main and Flower. How is Kelsey? Was he hurt much?
Yeah, he's dead.
I went to the car and sat down beside Max. He looked at me with a strange new light on his bearded face, one that was tragic and far off.
We have lost the name of kings. May golden cup becomes a dish of wood.
Easy, Max.
May one time kingdom a grave, a little grave, an obscure grave.
Max, listen to me. Can you understand what I'm saying?
Nay, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings. For death sits within the hollow crown that rounds our mortal temples and grins the buffoon, scoffing at our state. I, a king? You have mistook me all the while. For I only live by bread like you, dear cuz, like you. Give me that man that is not passion's slave, and I will wear him in my heart's core. Aye, in my heart's desire.
He sat there beside me quoting Shakespeare. He didn't know me or hear me. I don't think he ever saw me.
Once more.
He was in another world.
Once
a world
more.
Of his own dreams.
God,
I heard the siren of the approaching police car.
St. George!
And I know that though his body still lived, Max was gone. The king was dead. Well, the lights are winking out one by one from Clark Street with its flop houses to State Street with its glittering shops. Dawn is around the corner, bringing an end to sleep and to the dreams of those who walk by day and rest by night. Well, as Mr. Shakespeare himself once said, life itself is but a dream. But dream or real, we only go through here once. Too bad we don't make more of it. Oh, well. Copy, boy.
And here he is, the star of Nightbeat,
That was a fine story tonight, Frank Lovejoy.
Well, thank you very much, and let's thank Wheaties. Wheaties is sort of our middle name this summer, huh?
Well, a nicer middle name I can't think of, Frank. Folks at your house getting the Wheaties every morning, just like always?
Oh, sure, sure. The kids love them. I do, too, as a matter of fact. We got a regular spot for Wheaties on the kitchen shelf. You know, the salt goes here, flour goes here, Wheaties go here, right up in front, of course.
Sure, I know. Keep them right up in front of the kitchen shelf. Have them for breakfast tomorrow morning. Remember, Wheaties at 7 and help at 11.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus.
Night Beat, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 10th, 1950 on NBC. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levernier. Coming up next, the lineup directed by Jaime Del Valle. During the 1950s, he was a well-known director and producer for CBS Radio, behind programs like Richard Diamond, Private Detective, The Family Theater, and most notably, yours truly, Johnny Deller, producing or directing hundreds of episodes. This broadcast next, under his direction, is called The Bakery Bandit's Bad Blooper, from March 25th, 1952, on CBS.
Ladies and gentlemen, by transcription, we take you now behind the scenes of a police headquarters in a great American city, where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is The Lineup.
Mine's in the shop. I thought maybe you'd give me a lift home.
Well, I gotta wait for Pete, but you're welcome if you want to stick around.
Yeah, thanks. I'll see you later.
Yeah, see you later. Hello, Miss Green.
Oh, hello, Lieutenant.
Been here long?
Do you think you have the man?
Well, I don't know. If you see anybody that looks familiar at all, I want you to speak up.
Will there be many people to choose from?
There'll be quite a few.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please?
That's Sergeant Carter.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Carter, Sergeant Pete Carter. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. Questions I ask these suspects are merely to get a natural tone of voice, so do not pay too much attention to their answers as they often lie. Okay, bring on the light. All right, keep it moving right over to the end of the stage. Okay, now turn and face front. Hands at your sides. Number three, take your hands out of your pockets. Now, when you answer my questions, talk up so the people in the back of the room can hear what you have to say. Okay, Leroy Morris, open charge. Step out, Leroy. Where do you live?
237 and 1/4, North Jefferson.
Is that a house?
Oh, it's a hotel. The Jefferson Arms. It's a hotel.
Where do you work?
Well, I'm not working.
How long since you had a job?
Well, I guess about 3 months.
Where'd you work on your last job?
The Berkshire Baker.
He's too small.
You own a car?
Too small.
No.
When you worked at the bakery, Leroy?
The Berkshire Baker.
Yeah. You work at the main plant?
Yes.
What was your job?
I cleaned up.
Janitor?
Well, I guess you could call it that.
What would you call it?
The cleanup man.
Okay, Leroy, step back.
Yes, sir.
Number two, James Hamilton, open charge.
He's about the right size.
Where do you live? 9078 East Waterfield Street.
But that doesn't sound like his voice.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What's your business?
Handyman.
Afraid I don't know what a handyman is, Jim.
You don't?
Why don't you tell me?
No, that's not his voice. The other one was much higher.
Well, he could have raised it.
Yes, I guess he could.
Sergeant Carger.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Have the suspect raise his voice. Talk higher.
Raise your voice, Jim.
Higher?
Yeah, higher.
Like this?
Higher.
Higher, Sergeant.
Higher, Jim.
How is this?
Well, that's more like it.
Now, say something.
What do you want me to say? I feel silly.
State your name and address again.
James Hamilton, 9078 East Waterfield Street.
That's not the man, Lieutenant.
Okay, Sergeant.
That's fine, Jim.
Is that all?
You can speak naturally.
I hope I still can.
Step back, Jim.
I'm a soprano.
All right. All right, step back.
Okay.
Number three, William O'Brien, Grand Theft Auto. Come on, step out. Take your hands out of your pockets. Where do you live, Bill?
211 South Juanita.
Where's that?
That's a new development over near Marview.
He's not the one.
That's
he's
the,
too short.
New veterans development, isn't it, Bill?
Yes, sir.
What's your business?
Carpenter. I've never been arrested before.
Just answer the question.
I'm sorry.
You employed?
Yes, sir.
Where?
Clearfield Construction Company.
Anyone with you when you were arrested?
No, sir.
What kind of a car was it?
It's a foreign car, huh? I don't know what kind it was. I'd been drinking.
You drank much?
Well, not much. Had a fight with my wife. Oh, I'm sorry.
For what?
Just supposed to answer the question.
You had a fight with your wife?
Yes, sir.
You got drunk?
I sure did.
Then what'd you do?
Well, I don't remember much. I guess I just got in the car and drove it off. Guess I was feeling sorry for myself and just wanted something to happen.
It happened.
Yes, sir. It sure did.
How long you been married?
3 months since I got back from overseas.
Where overseas, Bill?
Korea.
You didn't hold up a bakery while you were feeling sorry for yourself, did you?
Hold up a bakery? I sure didn't, honest.
Okay, step back, Bill.
I'm sure he isn't the one.
No, I'm sure he isn't either. Want some coffee?
Yeah. No identifications, huh?
No. How's Miss Green going to identify anybody who walked into a store with a silk stocking over his head?
Pretty tough. You ever try it?
I've seen it. Here.
Thanks. Sure can change your face in a hurry.
Yeah. You know, whoever this guy is, he's smart. He's done all three jobs on Monday morning.
That's smart?
Well, he gets the take for two full days. These bakeries are open on Sunday.
Sounds like he might have worked for the bakery.
Yeah. Well, knows somebody who works for him. He wouldn't know how to find those floor safes unless he was well informed.
About 6'1".
Yeah.
Weight around 180.
Mm-hmm.
Wears brown hat and leather jacket.
And a silk stocking over his face.
Hey, that's good coffee.
Carries a gun, revolver. And I hope we get him before someone scares him and he starts using it.
You got the rest of the bakery staked out?
Yeah. Our men will cover from Sunday night till Tuesday morning. Can't spare them any longer than that. Guthrie.
That's Quine, Ben. Silk stocking boy at the Excelsior Bakery and shot a guy.
Kill him?
Don't know yet. Waiting for the ambulance.
Excelsior Bakery, huh? Okay, Pete and I'll take it.
Something hot?
The guy with the silk stocking just held up another bakery, shot someone.
Ben.
Yeah?
This isn't Monday.
There's Quine.
Hi, Ben. Pete.
Any witnesses?
Yeah, just the girl in the store.
Who's the man?
Checker for the bakery, just making the rounds.
Talk to the girl yet?
No, I've been too busy getting you in the ambulance down here.
Well, let's see what she has to say.
Hello, Miss Beatty.
How is he, Sergeant?
They'll take him to the hospital. We'll know more after he gets here. This is Lieutenant Guthrie and Sergeant Carter. They'd like to ask you some questions.
I hope I can help.
Did you get a good look at the man, Miss Beatty?
A good look? Yes, it was horrible. He looked like... Well, I can't describe it. His face was all pushed out of shape under his silk stocking.
Same guy.
How did it happen?
It all started after I'd given him the money.
He made you open the safe?
Yes, the floor safe. He made me go into the back of the store with him. I was scared stiff. Well, we got into the storeroom and he made me open the safe. Then he told me to put all the money into the bread bag. I did it as fast as I could. I just wanted him to leave, to get out of the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Scared in my life.
How did he know it was Mr. Burns?
How did he know? Well, I guess when I started talking to him, Mr. Burns, that is, I almost fainted when I saw who it was.
And did you try to warn him?
Mr. Burns? No, I was so scared that I just stood there. I'd only done something.
Well, now, just relax. Try to take it easy and take your time.
Yes, sir. I knew that Mr. Burns had come to check the store and... They'd go into the back of the store. All I could do was stand there. I tried to talk, but nothing would come out. Finally, I asked Mr. Burns to go away and come back later.
And what did Mr. Burns do?
Well, he just laughed and made a joke about my having a boyfriend in the back of the store. The robber must have gotten scared when Mr. Burns laughed, because that's when he... Oh, my gosh. I'm getting the shakes. Look at me.
Here. Sit down.
I'll be all right. It's funny. I was pretty good till I started telling you about it.
You want to tell us the rest?
Yeah, sure. I'll be all right. Well, Mr. Burns was still laughing when I heard the first shot. It all happened so fast, and I was so frightened.
Hey, you said first shot. How many shots were fired?
How many? Oh, three, I think. I was looking at Mr. Burns when the first one hit him. He stopped laughing. I'll never forget his face.
Did he shoot at you?
I don't think so. He fired two more times, as I remember, and Mr. Burns spun around and fell on the counter. Right over there.
The doc found three holes in Burns.
Mm-hmm. And what happened then?
Then the man ran out the front door. I ran after him and yelled for the police.
The man on the street called in. That's when I got the call.
Miss Beattie, can you remember if the holdup man touched anything? Or if there was any place where he might have left fingerprints?
Let me see. Oh, I don't think I'd remember if he did.
Get all the information on Miss Beattie. We want a statement.
Right.
I hope you catch him.
We will. This guy isn't going to be easy.
He'll slip. They always do.
Yeah. And in the meantime, he's liable to fill up this hospital.
Well, there's the doc. Hope he has something good to say.
I hope so.
Hello, Guthrie. You look as tired as I feel.
Yeah, I'm tired, all right. How about Burns?
Can't tell yet. He's still out. Just wheeled him out of surgery. Took three slugs out of the center abdomen.
Uh-huh. What were they?
Looked like 38s. Sent them over to Charlie in the lab.
I'll check.
They were steel jackets. Otherwise, Burns wouldn't have any stomach at all. Must have been fired at close range. Powder burns on his shirt.
According to the witness, he was about 10 feet away.
I sent the clothes down to Charlie in the lab.
Charlie's going to be tired, too.
Have any leads on who did it?
No, no a thing.
What does he look like?
You ever see a man with a silk stocking pulled over his head?
Oh, you're kidding.
Not a bit. Makes identification almost impossible.
Silk stocking, huh?
Thinking about trying it?
Might not be a bad idea when I want to sneak out of the house. Well, take care of yourself, Ben. Get some sleep.
I'll try.
Send you over some vitamins.
Thanks.
Doman.
Nice guy.
Yeah. We think we've got a tough job.
Probably won't show himself for a while after using that gun.
He might. So far, he's been taking nothing but chances.
He sure crossed us up.
Pulling a job on Wednesday?
Yeah.
Pretty smart.
Yeah?
2 days take again.
How do you figure?
Bank holiday yesterday.
Hey, you're right. I'll be darned.
Now, let's see what the lab's got.
Hi, boys.
What have you got for us, Charlie?
Got these, 38s.
Uh-huh.
Find anything in the bakery?
Yeah, nice little girl. Gave me some coffee cake to take home.
Anything official?
Nothing yet. The victim was shot from about 10 feet.
Yeah, we know that.
Hey, you want some coffee cake?
No, thanks.
You shouldn't be eating that stuff, Charlie. You're getting too heavy.
I'd want to diet if you're really worried.
Well, let's know if you find anything.
Don't I always?
Honest, Charlie. Can't stay healthy with all that weight.
My mental attitude. I escape by feeding my neurosis on coffee cakes and bonbons.
Well, I'm going to stake those bakeries out on a 24-hour schedule if it's just one man.
Ben.
Yeah, what's up, Coyne?
The man who got shot in the bakery, Mr. Burns.
Yeah, what about him?
Doc Gerson just called from the hospital. Burns died.
What about his family?
I'm going over there now.
Well, we've got a killer to catch now. Says here that meat's gone up another 4 cents.
Yeah?
Remember when you could get a hamburger for 15?
Yeah. Maybe we should be vegetarians, huh?
Vegetables are up, too.
Why don't you read the funnies?
I have.
Food keeps going up, we'll have to give up eating.
Sure. I can just see you.
That say anything about Burns getting shot?
Yeah. Silk stocking killer.
That'll sell papers.
Police. baffled. Always we're baffled. Why don't they say anything about the ones we wrap up in a hurry? Police not baffled.
Hmm.
Well, come on, don't hog it.
All right, here. Read the funnies.
Better than this menu.
What's the matter with the menu?
You read it lately?
I make it up.
I didn't think it looked real.
Jokes. Here. Two hamburger steaks in a hurry.
I'd sure hate to wait around when you were taking your time.
How do you put up with him, Lieutenant?
Ignore him.
Benny, I really love you.
Well, then lay off.
It's your food I'm mad at.
Yeah, yeah, right. Hey, look, I hate to bust this up.
All right, then don't.
Some guy just called in.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's out walking his dog, saw a guy bury a sack, dug up the sack, and found it full of money.
We're on the bakery job.
Yeah, well, that's what this is all about.
What do you mean?
The bag the money was in came from the Berkshire Bakery.
What's the man's name?
Davis. Arthur Davis.
Stop it, will you? Get back there.
Mr. Davis?
Yes, yes, what is it?
We're police officers, Mr. Davis.
Oh, come in, come in.
Thank you. This is
Sergeant... I thought you were coming right over. I called a good 15 minutes ago. Thought you would be right over here.
Well, we were having
the dinner. Money's in the other room in the sack. William? Oh, now, what's the matter with you? Do you like policemen?
I guess you don't like policemen.
I guess not.
I guess he ain't a police dog. Oh, there's the money.
Would you mind telling us how you found it?
Well, I dug it up. I told one of your men on the phone. Didn't he tell you?
Well, he was a little vague. He just said
I saw some fella burying it. I was out walking with him. I was out walking him, and I saw this fella burying something. What do you fellas call yourselves?
Well, I'm Guthrie.
Davis, Arthur Davis.
Now, how do you do?
William. Oh, he's quite a dog.
I'm sure he is.
I saw this fella out burying something, and he was looking mighty suspicious. Oh, yes, he was looking around like he was expecting to see a ghost or something.
You think you'd recognize him again, Mr. Davis?
Recognize? Oh, no. It was way too dark.
Well, didn't he see you?
Well, how could he?
Well, if you saw him...
Well, I was on the road above him. He couldn't see me, but I could sure see him. And William, he didn't open his mouth, not once. He's a good dog.
Hmm. You mind if I look at the bag, please?
Hmm? Oh, go ahead, yes. $432. That's what I found, and that's what you got.
Would you mind showing us where you found this, Mr. Davis?
Why, certainly, certainly. $432. I didn't touch a bit of it. Come on, William. Let's show the fellas where we found the... Oh, excuse me.
Phew. Yeah.
Hello? What's that? Who? No, my name is Davis. Guthrie?
Must be quiet.
No. This is Davis.
That's for me, Mr. Davis.
Yes, wait a minute. Why didn't you say who you wanted? You asked for some fellow named Guthrie.
Well, I'm Guthrie. I told my office to call.
William, now you just shut up now. You know, it's not polite to make all this racket when someone's trying to talk on the telephone.
Where?
Now, if I've told you one time, I've told you a
thousand. Okay. I'll get right over.
Yeah, nice
boy. Yeah. Boy with a silk stocking.
Boy with a silk stocking.
Another bakery?
Yeah. You stay here with Mr. Davis.
Well, ain't you going to come along while I show you?
Well, you show Sergeant Carger.
Who?
I'm Carger.
Oh, well, surely. Come along. I'll show you. Yes, you can come, William.
After he shows, you send him back to the house. Quine said our boy's wounded, so maybe he'll come back to dig up with the money.
Right.
You fellas coming? I want to leave this door open, you know.
Be right there, Mr. Davis.
Oh, hold your horses, will you, boy?
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Not far now. Just up ahead, and then you turn right. Just up ahead.
All right, Mr. Davis.
I left Sergeant, what's his name?
Carger.
I left him up there. Oh, it's cold up there. Turn right. Better slow down now. Wish you'd let me take William with me. He won't like me going out without... Stop right here. Yeah. That, what's his name? He should be around here somewhere.
Hey, up, Heath.
Now, the place where he buried the money is right down below the road.
You don't have to get out, Mr. Davis.
Well, don't you want me to show you where...
Well, you showed Sergeant Carger, didn't you?
Well, sure I showed him.
Well, then you better go back to your house.
Oh, I wanted to stick around for the fireworks.
Take him back, Quine.
Right.
Well, look, I showed you where I dug up the money.
I'm sorry, Mr. Davis. Come right back, Quine. Give us a whistle.
Right.
Oh, boy, I don't think that's very nice of you. I find you the money in
the... There's a character.
Now, where's the spot?
Oh, off the road and down the hill. Watch your step, though. Kind of steep.
Yeah, kind of.
Right over here. Over here. What was doing at the bakery?
It was small stakeout. A boy with a silk stocking came in and Small covered him.
Here's the spot.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you're back here, a man must have gotten away.
Yeah. Let's get out of sight. I'll tell you about it.
Yeah, trees over there, pretty good.
Right. Small and the suspect shouted out. Small hit him, but doesn't know how bad. Chased him, but there was a lot of traffic in that district.
Yeah, how's this?
Okay. Now, which way does Stocking Face come up here?
Davis didn't see him come up, but he says he left down that way. Mm. There's a golf course over there. Must have come through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he's not hurt too badly, he may come looking for his money.
And if he is hurt badly, he might save us some trouble.
Bled a lot. We're pretty sure he had a car parked over on Adams. A couple of people saw a man run up to a car and take off. They all said it looked like he was hurt.
Any license number?
No. The guy sure got a lot of nerve.
Pressed his luck too far this time. After killing Burns, you'd think he'd stay low for a while.
You'd think so.
Well, no telling about some people.
Wish I'd brought a heavy coat.
Wish you'd brought two.
I flash it again. Keep coming.
Yeah, watch your step.
I parked the car down the hill.
Yeah, we heard you.
It's off the road in case he comes up that way.
He came through the golf course last time. Over that way.
Oh, it's cold. Sure is. What time is it?
Yeah, about 9:30. Golf course, huh?
Yeah. You play?
Yeah, not for a long time. Used to be pretty good.
I never could get interested in that game.
Oh, it's a great game.
Look, I pounded a beat for a lot of years. I had enough walking.
Oh, but it's great exercise.
This is all the exercise I'll ever want. Boy, I'm freezing.
I just thought of something.
What?
Funny if they already got it.
Well, I told them where we were. They'd let us know.
I'll bet you a good dinner.
Hold it. You hear it?
No.
I didn't hear anything, Ben.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a dog or something.
That's no dog.
Keep it down.
You see him?
No. There he is. Wheelie goes over to the hall.
He's holding his shoulder. He's hurt.
He's our boy.
Let him get to the hall.
What's with that dog?
Yeah, sounds like it's coming up here.
William!
Oh, no.
William, you come back here.
Look out, a man's running.
Stop! Stop or I'll shoot!
Look out, Ben. He's down.
Everybody okay?
Yeah.
Shut up, William.
Yeah, let's take a look.
William! William! Are you all right?
Oh, that crazy nut.
William!
Stay where you are, Davis.
William, get out.
Yeah.
You got the fella, huh?
How about it, Quine?
He's dead.
Oh, shame on you, William. That's a dog, you.
Mr. Davis.
Yeah?
Come here.
Well, sure.
Take it easy, Pete.
What do you want? Has that dog got a license? Huh?
Lineup, where before you pass the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. Listen again next week when we again bring you The Lineup.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Cogger, Sergeant Pete Cogger. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. At the end of each line, when I ask for questions or identifications, call out the number. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. The officer is working there.
The Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone as Lieutenant Ben Guthrie, was written by Blake Edwards and Robert Wells, with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in tonight's cast were Jack Moyles as Sergeant Pete Cogger, with Joel Samuels, Virginia Gregg, Howard McNear, Harry Lang, Jim Backus, and Dave Light. The lineup was transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle.
The Lineup on Tuned to Yesterday from March 25th, 1952 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.